This is CliffCentral.com.
Good morning, folks. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. Yes, it's another pre-recorded show because if you're listening to this live, I have extremely sore legs. Hopefully, I've actually finished running the Comrades Marathon.
Ooh.
Yeah, I'm down there. I actually leave today, Friday, or Thursday. Well, leave tomorrow, Friday, and running on Sunday. So.
Why are you running? What's chasing you?
Nothing's going to be chasing me. I think it's just a personal challenge. Something that has to be done.
How many have you done?
This will be my second. My first one I did 10 years ago. So it's kind of like my first again. A little bit nervous, but you know what? That's what we do.
I got a little video clip to send you.
Have you, please?
One of the last comrades where this guy's standing on the sideline and he's drunk. And he's egging the comrades runners on. And a couple of people come walking past, and he says, "Hey, this is not a walking race. This is a run."
Yeah, so lots of time spent on the legs. But listen, let's get straight into it. We've got quite a bit to get through this morning. And let's go. Let's dig in. So Extreme Bucky for SA, would you retest your license to drive a Monster Shelby F-150? So we know that we're a nation of committee Bucky fanatics. We know that South Africans love Buckies. You just look at the cars on the road. We really do enjoy them. And so suffice to say that an announcement by Shelby South Africa on its intention to deliver right-hand drive F-150 Buckies to the local market has been met with predictably massive interest. If let's just chat about this, guys. I mean, we all know the big F-1 pickups. They are, you know, typical American, you know, brash kind of big Buckies. I happen to be a fan of. I would certainly love to drive one. I've seen the price tag on these. Don't think I'd ever be able to afford one. But
you're not talking about the monster trucks, right?
No. Definitely not a monster truck. But
well, almost a road-going monster truck in this case. When Ty says it's an extreme Bucky, it really is.
I mean, how big are these things? They are pretty large. Well,
big enough to the point where you can't get away with a normal Code 8 license.
Well, that's what's up for discussion here, isn't it? Because you are going to have to redo your license to drive one of these. Do you think that's going to be an issue?
It's mostly related to the vehicle's weight, not necessarily to the size.
Okay.
I mean, with a normal EB co-driver's license, you can get up to 3.5 tons total weight. And if these things are loaded, they go a fair bit over that, which is why you need to retake your driver's license.
Well, I suppose the same as aircraft, right? I mean, I'm rated to fly anything under 650 kilos, which, you know, if I want to go over 650 kilos, it's a different rating. Plus, I have to have a rating per aircraft, even under 650 kilos, although the flying technique's the same.
Single twin props.
You know, even a different aircraft type. You have to get another license or another rating.
Well, different kind of rating.
You know what? I believe this Shelby thing will actually sell in South Africa.
I think it
won't reach huge numbers, but it will appeal to the same kind of people that buy a Mercedes X-Class or an Amarok V6,
yes.
Which at this stage is the biggest and the most expensive one you can get.
Yeah. So interesting to see. I mean, I just think they're fantastic. You know, this kind of reminds me of the A-Team back in the day. You know, those are kind of the Buckies that the guys. Because I know Ford did bring in the F-250, didn't they?
Yeah, a few years ago.
Yes.
The single cab was actually rated at the point where a normal Code 8 license could handle it. But a 4x4 or a double cab wasn't, because that would have pushed the licensing weight just that little bit over the edge.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a couple of them driving around.
Those things are
beasts.
Huge.
I mean, they pretty much take up a whole lane, don't they?
And remember, those are like two generations old now.
Yeah.
And with generational bloat affecting Buckies as much as anything, I think this F-150 will probably be as big or bigger.
Martin, what is the tie-in to Shelby here? I mean, is this a... Why is it a Shelby F50 and not a Ford F50?
Shelby is to Ford like AC Schnitzer is to BMW.
Okay, all right.
So it's a semi-factory sanctioned
Is that the same as AMG to Mercedes Benz?
No, not quite. Okay. So AMG is now part of Mercedes Benz.
Okay. Yeah, how they used to,
they used to be before Merck bought them out.
Yeah.
So it's the same kind of scenario. And Shelby has
just an endorsed conversion.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that we doesn't affect the factory warranty.
Well, either that, or Shelby gives their own warranty as well.
All right. Well, I mean, nice to see. It doesn't say when they're going to be arriving, but. Yeah, it will be cool to see some of these on the road and actually see how they sell and also the market that they're going to tackle. I think these will do well on the farms, you know. I think they can carry up to 1.5 tons.
Yeah, I don't think farmers would be interested in these. Farmers would probably stick to their Hiluxes or our Isuzus.
There we go. All right. Okay, well, moving from something big like that onto something a lot more racier, more virpa for your VW Polo. So a hot 147 kilowatt GTR arrives in South Africa. And the question that I'll ask is this necessary on a Polo? And if you have a look at the Fiesta and then they had the Focus and the STs, they're obviously following the same suit. I mean, the GTI, we know from the Golf days, is an absolute legend of a vehicle, and they're obviously just applying similar thinking here with the Polo.
Now, the interesting thing is, as we know, the new Polo is basically just a scaled-down Golf.
Yes.
And now it uses a version of the same engine as well. So this is literally a Golf GTI Lite.
Yeah, I mean, but Golf or VW has done this in the past. You know, the old Golf, I had a GTI like this. It was the first kind of bulkier Golf GTI after the.
It
was about two generations Golf after the two, City Golf. Yeah. Where the round shapes started coming in.
Yes. I had one of those as well.
Yes, I had one of those GTIs. Then I think that engine ended up in the Polo GTI, which was the old turbocharged.
Not quite. Oh, you mean the 1.8 turbo?
Yes, the 1.8 turbo ended up in the Polo, and then they moved the Golf to a 2 liter.
Yeah, with the next generation, it became a 2 liter.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. So this is not the first time that this has been done.
Nope. But the interesting thing is, this new Polo GTI actually retails for less than the outgoing Golf. Wow. In spite of being an all-new, much more modern design with a lot more new technology and all sorts of things, it's actually 15,000 rand on average, cheaper than the outgoing one because it's built locally now. It's not imported like the old one was.
Yeah. So 375,000, well, call it 376,000.
Well, it's a Volkswagen, so you must know for that you will have to add seats and wheels. And everything is optional.
Okay, so you're just getting the chassis and the shell and you're still going to put everything in. Yeah. But I see it does come with a lot of features.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, you know, having owned a Polo when they originally came out, a lot more features than my Polo ever had. But new active info display, new cockpit environment. What else they got here? Convenience and assistance system, rear traffic alert, driver alert system, driver profile selection, park assist, tire pressure loss indicator.
All of the technology is starting to become standard, and your optional extras are still seats and wheels.
Yeah.
Well, that's because this Polo is based on the same platform as the new Golf. It's literally the same thing, just scaled down.
Just scaled down.
Not a huge power increase from the outgoing one. It's 6 kilowatts up. And with an auto, as the new one, it's only available with a DSG gearbox. But
I think it's about time that DSG is standard.
Well, I mean, the previous one launched with a DSG, and then it received the update when it went up to a 1.8 liter turbo motor.
Yeah.
And then they made DTI with a manual gearbox, and nobody bought it.
Exactly. So this DSG became standard.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure this one will be virpa as well.
So it'll make the right
noises,
and it's going to move. Mm. It's going to be fast. Anyway, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of sales of these on the East Rand. Just put that out there right now.
No, Durban, no. China.
Do you think so?
Durban.
No, I reckon more Oaks Durban. In the Vale will be buying these.
And Pretoria as well.
I think it's going to be a popular car. I have no doubt. Gents, yeah, I mean, there's something. It's like the big white elephant in the room. We all know what happened on Wednesday night. The fuel price went up again. And I think the price of petrol increased by 82 cents to more than 15 rand a litre, the highest South Africans will ever have had to pay for petrol. From the 6th of June, motorists will fork out 15 rand 20 cents. This is at the coast. And 15 rand 79 for inland for petrol. During the same period in 2017, motorists breathed a sigh of relief with a 23 cents drop per litre of petrol. It's just absolutely ridiculous because this, I mean, the knock-on effect of this is everything. It's food. I mean, you look at...
Well, I mean, everything has to be transported. Well, not everything, but most things get transported by truck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Across the country. So you know, delivery fees are going to go up.
Well, the really shocking thing here is about 40% of that petrol price is tax.
Yes. Yeah.
That's actually the disgraceful thing.
Is it percentage or is it a rate or rand?
It's a percentage. So the base fuel price goes up,
so the coffers get fuller.
The coffers get fuller as well because the base price goes up, so the tax percentage goes up as well.
Well, not the tax percentage, the tax absolute value.
The tax value for the same percentage goes up as well.
Exactly. So the fuel price comprises four main elements: the general fuel levy, which is 3 rand and 37 cents, the road accident fund contribution is 1 rand 93 a litre. Then there's the basic fuel price, and then there's the wholesale and retail margins. You know, so the latter of the two make up the remainder of the current 15 rand and 54 cents. But interestingly enough, the petrol price of the price of petrol in Lesotho, in Swaziland, Botswana, and Namibia is all considerably cheaper than ours. Yet they're probably getting that. Well, they're getting their fuel from us. So it's purely just a tax.
And they're not selling it at a loss either. Remember that.
Of course, they're selling it at a profit, but
they're selling it still at their profit.
What is that? What is that tax portion?
Tax, general fuel levy 337, and road accident fund is 193.
So 337 and 193.
520.
337 and 193 over what's the price going to now? 15 rand 20.
Yeah.
Well, at
1579.
Inland.
Well, that's inland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's a third. One third of the fuel price
is
going to tax type things.
Mm-hmm.
One third, 33%, and that's where the other countries can make or South Africa can make it cheaper. They can make it 33% cheaper.
So is it easier just to pop over the border and actually fill up your tank
and drive back?
There are some people who live close to the border who actually
exactly
do that.
Like, you know, if you think about the guys in the Western Cape, close to Namibia, paying 11 rand 69 there. If you live close to Swaziland, 12 rand 78. Botswana, 10 rand 53.
Well, look, my little car has like a 45-litre tank. And for the first time ever, I actually went on Tuesday morning and filled the thing to the brim.
Yeah. Well, this just begs my standard argument is this is another perfect reason why more people should be on two wheels.
Yes.
Because the dent in your pocket is not going to be as bad.
Electric cars, China.
Well, electric cars. Electric cars.
And there you go again.
Yes, exactly.
Well, listen, I've set up some topics here for you guys to have your proper banter here today. But anyway, let's get on to the next story. I don't know if you guys probably will remember. I don't know if you recall, about 30 years ago, there was a Mercedes-Benz advert that showed an S-Class driving around Chapman's Peak.
Beat the Benz.
Beat the Benz. No. That was the BMW reaction. Beat the Benz, right. But the Mercedes-Benz ad it literally told the story of a gentleman, Christopher White, who was driving home and he was tired, and I don't know what happened, but he looked down, or he took his attention off of the road, and he plummeted over 100 meters down a cliff
onto face. The
so
rocks.
It's essentially 30 stories high. Yeah. And he actually, I mean, you'll see there is, if you jump onto Wheels 24, there's actually a video. And what Mercedes-Benz have done is they've actually partnered up with a big agency and they've recreated the story. So what they do is they're literally playing the advert again. And what they've done with Christopher is they went back to the scene of the accident this year, and they got him to they got him to sit in the new, I think it's the new S class, and they told him that this car would autonomously drive him around Chapman's Peak. And you watch this video and you see this guy like white knuckling. He's driving, and you hear the guy in the car say on his left hand side, say, "Okay, cool, take your hands off, push the autonomous mode and take your hands off the steering wheel," and you can see the man is nervous, and he does.
Well, understandably.
And I just, like, for me, from a marketing and advertising point of view, I mean, what an awesome thing to do, because I remember that ad. I'll never forget that ad. You know, you had heard the metal, you know.
Especially right at the end where, with a camera, you can see the door opening and then you hear it closing.
Yeah. And he did, Christopher said, and they interview him in the video. He literally unclipped his seatbelt and he climbed out of the car. And he became a bit of a celebrity in Cape Town after that. And they've redone this video. And really what it is Mercedes-Benz kind of launching the autonomous features in their new S-Class.
Yeah. Except that it's still optional.
Yes, it's still optional, but
this has got seats in it and wheels.
Yeah, so I mean, you know, just hats off to them. I really think it was such a cool story, and it was funny because, you know, obviously on YouTube and stuff, you get to see these kind of adverts. And as soon as I saw the start of the ad, it was amazing that your memory can actually remember 30 years an advert from 30 years ago.
I must say, if I was the star in that ad, well, apart from the old Mercedes, of course.
Yes.
And I was tasked with driving around there again and taking my hands off the wheel at the scene of this accident.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would have managed to do that.
Well, I mean, you know, they've got cameras on him the whole time, and they're talking to him, and they actually set him up. He didn't know what they were going to do, so he had no idea.
Oh, wow.
And they put him in the car, and then the guy's like, "Okay, push that button, take your hands off the wheel," and you can see his hands moving on his legs and stuff. But really, really brilliant. That's so awesome. I just thought it was a really, really cool story, and that's kind of got me all excited. The Legends of Roslyn celebrating BMW's heritage in style. Martin, you wrote a story for Auto Trader, and it's on our news and reviews section, and I saw this online and I was like, holy smoke, what a cool story. What was that all about? Tell us about
it. Before you go to the story, I used to have the Shadow Line.
Yeah.
I always wanted the 333, because the 333 was the South African answer to the M3.
Correct.
And the 333, if you had a 333,
you were the boss.
You were the man.
Yeah.
You were it.
Well, I think
my Shadow Line was nothing compared to a 333.
I think if you still have a 333 in some places in South Africa, you are still the man.
Exactly. Yeah, no, so, look, I had to fight my colleagues here in the office.
Did you? But because you're the biggest,
you won.
To go on
this one.
Yeah.
And my trump card in the end was, I was aware or self-aware and a car fan already when these things were new. Please let me meet my heroes.
Yes.
And as luck would have it, I managed to get behind the wheel of the 333.
Wow.
From the word go.
I've never.
So that was the first one. All right. I've never driven a 333 either. I've only seen them from a distance.
Yo.
But I was always a fan of this specific engine, the M30 motor.
Yeah.
Now, I had that engine in my old 535, or a version of that engine.
Yes.
And I could only imagine what it would be like in a featherweight 3 Series.
Yes.
And can I tell you, it was every bit as good as I imagined it would
be. Wow.
I love the 333 more than ever.
Wow. I mean, I read your article, and it painted an awesome picture for me. I mean, you spoke about, you know, I mean, you're quite a tall guy. I mean, how tall are you?
Just you're 1.94.
1.94. So what's that?
6'3".
Yeah. And you said, and like, it's a tiny car.
It's a little bit bulky.
I mean, all the 3 Series in those days weren't.
Were, exactly. Yeah. What Martin goes on to say is that when you sit in the car, you actually don't feel it.
Well, I think the feeling of claustrophobia is alleviated by the fact you can actually see out of the windows. That's one of the things we've lost over the last 3 decades, is the ability to actually see out of a car.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe it. I mean, if I turned my head, I could see the tail end of the boot spoiler.
Yeah.
So there's no need for reverse cameras, yeah? You can actually see where the car ends.
Yeah.
So you sit quite high, and the windows are very deep, and the roof pillars are very slim, and it feels like you're sitting in a fishbowl, which kind of alleviates that whole claustrophobia thing. But yes, it is a tiny car.
The only thing that used to drive me nuts with that 325 was the gear shift. The gear shift, you could never shift quickly. It just is impossible to shift quickly in a 3 Series BMW of this era.
It took them decades to get that right, actually.
It was unbelievably slow. It was like you just needed the car's power to out gear shift anyone else.
But now imagine that gear shift, but worse. Because the Trip 3 had a dogleg gearbox. So first is where you'd expect second gear to be. And reverse was where first is supposed to be.
So where so one top left?
No, one is
one bottom left.
One bottom left.
Right. Second. And then second and third is in the middle plane. Fourth and fifth is in the right plane.
Okay.
So you have to concentrate on that as well. And because it's a different gearbox with heavy duty clutch, it's a lot more work than it was with the 3-5, which I drove a bit later. But that's also part of the car's charm. I mean, once you learn to master this gearbox, you can actually shift very quickly.
I used to shift and able to wheel spin in second.
Well, can I?
It took a lot of effort to do it.
Well, between you and me, the Trip 3 can actually do that into third.
Jeez.
Really?
Yes, torque. Jeez. There's a lot of torque. Yeah. And it's such a charismatic thing. I mean, the one I drove, the one in BMW's Heritage or Legacy collection.
Is that the car that you actually took out?
That's the car I took out. This one in the pictures, that's the one I drove.
Oh, wow.
Now, that car did not have power steering.
Yeah. My car did.
Yeah. But the thing is, with this big 7 Series engine and 5 Series engine, there was no space under bonnet. You had to choose either aircon or power steering. You couldn't have both.
I would have gone with power steering, I think.
So would I. Now, this one had aircon, so no power steering. Oh. So it's really hard work to drive this car.
I can imagine that. I mean, I took a road trip to Cape Town in my 3 Series back then.
In the day,
And it must have been one of the hottest years that year, because on the way through the Karoo, at a little place called Liuhamka. I don't even know where Liuhamka is.
In the triangle between Nixnar and St. Bogo.
Exactly. That's where Liuhamka is. Now, Liuhamka, on that day, outside temperature, was 45 degrees. Yeah. 45 degrees. Oof. I had to turn my car's aircon off because the 3 Series aircon off, because the aircon radiator and the car's radiator sat behind the aircon radiator. And if you turn the aircon on, it sucked all of the air, and the car got no air.
So you've got to now
45 degrees, switch the aircon off, because you need to drive the car more than you need an aircon.
Absolutely.
Windows open.
You know, look, cars certainly have come a long way in the last 30-odd years.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I really wish we had more cars of real character and actual personality, such as these.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you've said that, because we're going to chat about something just now.
Imagine this thing with an electric motor.
So what was the story behind this?
No, because then it won't sound proper. It has to sound.
Yeah, you know what? I'll give in to you.
Oh, here we go. Okay,
jeez,
there we go.
Wow.
Never forget this day. Never forget this day.
Note in my diary.
So, what was the story behind this? Was it just a road trip? You guys drove through Soweto, Vilakazi Street. I mean, what was the reaction from the people?
We can't believe it. Look,
really,
I've always known that the 3 Series was legendary in the townships.
Mm.
But to actually take, and this was the king of the 3 Series, and I was in the Trip 3 driving through Soweto.
Yeah.
I've never been cheered by so many onlookers.
Wow.
And everybody implores me, rev it. They just want to hear it.
Yeah, and I suppose with all the speed bumps on that road, you had plenty of opportunity to do that. Oh, fantastic.
This day was arranged by BMW South Africa to introduce the 325iS.
Yes.
The Evo 1 shadow line we had there, the silver one.
Yes.
What they do is they find nice examples of their heritage cars and then they rebuild them. And the 325iS was just completed. It's a freshly completed project. And I mean, that car is so original. It's still that, I think, Grundig radio.
It was Grundig radio,
which it came out of the factory. 60,000 kilos on the clock. That car is an absolute gem.
Sure.
No wonder. Look, that car is probably worth $1 million.
Do they give you tapes to play?
They still have the tooling for it.
No.
I mean, gee whiz.
So they found a 325S, which was in a rather tatty shape.
Okay, so they rebuilt it.
And then they rebuilt the whole thing. Okay, they restored it to original factory spec, right down to the tartan seats.
Awesome. Jeez, that's going way back.
Huh? Yeah, so this was basically an introduction for the press to this car.
Yeah.
Now, my real regret is they didn't have the M1 there, because I really wanted to drive the M1 as well.
Well, it sounds like it was a fantastic trip.
I think you drove the
tripper.
Legend. That's the main thing. You drove what every BMW owner's dream would have been.
I mean, what would that car have set you back?
I think it retailed for 65,000 back in 1986.
That's the 333.
Yeah. Now, remember, for some perspective, at that stage, an Audi 500 SE, like the top spec, would cost about 45,000.
And this was?
65.
Okay, so you had to be quite a big hitter.
This was a seriously expensive car.
Sure, but
I even looked for mags like that on Shadowline because they were hen's teeth.
Yes, see.
They still are.
Oh, well, what a nice story. And you can go and read about that on autotrader.co.za under our news and review section. Martin unpacks the entire story there. Right, guys, let's get into our F1 segment here. George, we obviously touched on Monaco Grand Prix. We got the Canadian Grand Prix, which is happening this weekend. And obviously, you know, we can't predict the future. But what do you think is going to go down? What's happening in the news from
so
F1?
I think it's going to be back to normal.
Okay.
You know, and what I say by normal is more passing.
Yes.
Ferrari and Mercedes are going to be up front again.
Yeah.
The thing that I think is beginning to play out is Mercedes has brought, if you compare the first two races and then the races thereafter, Mercedes has actually got better.
Yeah.
You know, Ferrari looked like they were running away from the pack. Mercedes has actually got better. So Lewis has become faster. Bottas is close on his tail, although he's not doing as well. But I think the thing that is going to make a big difference this weekend is all the teams are able to bring a new engine.
I believe so.
So that, for me, in Ferrari's camp, is what is Ferrari going to bring from a development point of view, which may just pip them back to above. Because maybe Mercedes changes were ones that were going to come in this engine change. I don't know. But it remains to be seen. And by the time the listeners hear this, you know, the results will be there.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all exciting because obviously that engine change can make a massive difference. I mean, you know, what are they allowed to change? Is it minor changes? I mean, is it...
No, they're allowed to bring a new power unit.
Oh, okay. So they get a fresh new engine.
So they only get, I think 3 power units for the year.
Okay.
And you're allowed to change it, you know, every so often.
Do you have to change it now for the Canadian Grand Prix?
You don't have to,
but you can.
But you can.
So the window period's open.
If you don't change that engine,
yes.
You know, you're going to be behind because the developments come. The new engines come from the manufacturers, and they have new technology and stuff. And if you still run the old engine, you're probably going to be in the back.
Okay, fantastic. I see Daniel Ricciardo has put his Red Bull talks on hold until Lewis Hamilton signs a new deal with Mercedes-Benz. And this is not the claim of F1 speculative grapevine, but instead of Dr. Helmut Marko, the top official at Red Bull. Is there discussions about where these guys are going to be driving next year?
So the funny thing is, all of them are holding back on these discussions for some reason.
Yeah.
You know, it's anybody's game. We know that Vettel will stay with F1. I mean, stay with Ferrari.
Yes.
That's a fact. We know that. We also know that. Anecdotally, it's not kind of been mentioned in the public, but anecdotally, Vettel has veto over who the second driver is.
Okay.
And he wants Raikkonen to stay.
Okay.
The only reason he wants that to be is because he wants to be the number one driver.
I mean,
bring Ricciardo into the Ferrari team, Vettel may be challenged.
Okay.
He wouldn't want that.
Yeah.
But then Ferrari has to make decisions for the entire team, not just for Vettel, but... If they do bring Ricciardo into Ferrari, what are the chances of losing Vettel? So now you've got this conundrum where you may have 2 brand new drivers and then not even win.
Yeah.
So Ferrari, I think, is the number one driver is going to be Vettel.
Okay.
The number two driver, I don't see Raikkonen leaving, but you never know. And then everything else seems to spin around Hamilton.
Yes, whether he signs with Mercedes-Benz again or he doesn't.
And then I think if we see Hamilton sign with Mercedes again, which I think is 99% kind of guaranteed, everyone else's contracts will start to get signed. And because everybody wants to drive for a Ferrari and Mercedes.
Yeah. I mean, they clearly are the two big names. It's just, it's interesting that they would be having these discussions in the middle of the season.
They sign multiple season contracts. It's not one season to the next.
It's just that, but then how come they're having these negotiations now? They're negotiating for the next 3 or 4 years.
For the next couple of years, yeah. Sure. Because their next year's car would need to be prepared
for that driver.
And they generally have to start months in advance.
Exactly. I wonder if it throws a span in the works in terms of driver focus and, I mean...
Well, I mean, if you think about it, every single driver gets onto the track to win.
Absolutely.
You know, and if any of them let this distract them, then obviously they're not going to get the contracts for the future.
Absolutely.
Yeah, but they don't have the mental fortitude to be there in any case.
Yes, exactly.
And I suppose the intention is that every driver would like to drive for the best team.
Well, I mean, if I was Ricardo, I'd want to drive for a works team. You know, a team that that's engine isn't bought in.
Yes.
You know, Red Bull's
they're running Renaults.
The engine's bought in. It's not it's not a works team. Yeah. Whereas Ferrari and Mercedes are different.
Yeah.
So the Renault team, for instance, they're not doing well, but they're at least a team that doesn't have to buy their engines from someone else.
Yeah. All right. Well, on that note, we'll see what happens in the Canadian Grand Prix, and we'll, as usual, we'll keep you up to speed on what's going down. Let's get into some topical stuff. The International Engine of the Year. I was obviously trailing the net looking
Is
for...
Is it electric?
No, it's not, but...
No, it's a real engine.
No, but...
Define real.
But hang on a second. So Ferrari's 3.9-litre twin-turbo V8 engine has scooped the International Engine of the Year award for the third time in succession.
That's no surprise, though.
Okay, so this engine, which powers the Ferrari 488 and the 488 Spider and the 488 Pista, took overall top honours and also won the best performance engine, the best 3-litre in the 3-litre to 4-litre category. But interestingly enough, the International Engine of the Year in fourth place was the Tesla full electric powertrain. Now, I'm assuming that this is a competition that's been, has been going on for a number of years, and it is clearly visible that electric motors are now starting to really impact these kind of competitions. I was surprised when I saw it. I wouldn't have expected it to be there. I thought it would have been under its own, like in the electric segment.
But it is an engine at the end of the day.
The best green engine.
It is the best green engine.
It is the best engine, full stop. So for me, the electric motor was around before internal combustion motors. The only thing we know is that the battery couldn't follow suit. Yep. So that's why they ditched it and went for the second best engine in the world. So for me, it makes absolute sense that it's on the list.
I think it's great news. Martin, what is your take on this? Do you think this is a whole bunch of hogwash?
Look, some of those Engine of the Year winners in the past have actually turned out to be quite disastrous.
Oh, really?
Some Volkswagen TSI motors, some of the very first TSI motors, actually won also for many, many years. And they turned out to be less than durable.
Yeah.
The problem is this award, or these awards, are awarded by engineers. So they look at the technical specifications and how clean it is and in relation to the performance and performance per liter and all those things. We still don't really know how well they'll last, unfortunately. That said, it's also very nice to see that Volkswagen's 1-liter three-cylinder.
Yeah, well, let's just run through the list. And I'll just
Before you run through the list, I think this competition is flawed by definition.
Mm-hmm.
The electric motors can't win these categories because they're all centered around historical internal combustion engine
parameters.
Lingo and parameters. Mm-hmm. You know, how do you get an electric motor to even be in a sub 1 liter or 1 liter to 1.4 liter category? It's not how electric motors are measured.
Yeah, exactly.
And then also this engine is scooped International Engine of the Year award for the third time in succession. And you said that in the 4 liter category. Well, how did Tesla end up fourth in the International Engine of the Year if it misses all of the criteria when it comes to liters.
I have no idea.
This entire competition is flawed.
I see that.
Yes, I agree. Okay. The electric motors should not be there.
Oh. Oh my, here we go. So, okay, let's go through that list quickly. So, I mean, look, I agree because, you know, I suppose you've got to compare apples with apples, yeah. So it should be, you know, what would it be? Petrol or diesel engines, and then electric should have.
You've got to pit the two against each other. I think you should make it fair to the electric motor. This is so unfair to the electric motor.
Well, I suppose it's. I mean, how long has this competition been running?
Oof. 15 years.
Okay, so I mean, maybe over time they need to just readjust and you know, make it fair for everybody. But the best performance engine, Ferrari twin turbo.
I love Ferrari, so I'm not going to
say that. Best new engine, Ferrari 6.5 liter V12.
And that is a monster.
Best green engine. Let's chat about these, and then the best electric powertrain. Now, what's the difference between, I suppose the powertrain is different to the engine. Tesla's fully electric powertrain, then the BMW 1.5, 3 liter cylinder electric petrol hybrid. And then if you look at best electric powertrain, Tesla again, followed by BMW. Then General Motors, Renault, Volkswagen, and Honda.
I don't actually understand how BMW ended up ahead of General Motors there.
Yeah.
Because an i3, for instance, with its special carbon fiber construction and everything, I think the rated range on that thing is 129 miles, whereas a Chevy Bolt can run 239 or 238. It's literally double the range.
Yeah.
So how could the BMW one be better than General Motors one?
I don't know. Maybe something wrong with the judging.
There we go.
Anyway, let's move on to our next story. Something that's really, really, you know, good to see is that the first Saudi women are getting their driver's licenses. So Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, on Monday began issuing its first driving licenses to women in decades, authorities said, just weeks before the historic lifting of the conservative kingdom's ban on female motorists. So Saudi women are obviously allowed to get their licenses, but they were only allowed to drive in other countries. And the... So 10 Saudi women swapped their foreign licenses for Saudi ones in multiple cities, including the capital. I just want to get to the who was it? There's a new prince, Mohammed, who recently undertook a global tour aimed at reshaping his kingdom's image, has sought to break the long-held restrictions on women. So I thought that was really nice, and I wasn't aware that Saudi women weren't allowed to drive in their own country.
I didn't know that either.
Well, I'm not terribly surprised, but this is a good step forward.
Yeah, it's a good step forward.
Well, I think you know, it's not just that. I mean, there are a whole bunch of other rules and regulations that he's lifted, which is really, really nice. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's just crazy to think that in 2018, you know, women in Saudi Arabia weren't allowed to drive, but they are oppressed.
Look for the Crown Prince to launch a liberalization drive, and one of these things, one of the points is that women are allowed to drive. It sounds a bit backwards to start off with.
It's writing on the wall. I mean, they have to.
In preparation for the lifting of the ban, Saudi Arabia last week passed a landmark law to criminalize sexual harassment, introducing a prison term of up to 5 years and a maximum penalty of equivalent to R1 million. Saudi Arabia is the only country in the world where women are not allowed to drive and has long faced global criticism for this, obviously. But Prince Mohammed is obviously, you know, quite a forward-thinking dude, and he has decided to change it all up. Mm. So, well done, Prince.
Great news.
Right, let's get into our car review for the week. And, Mart, you've been driving around in the new Nissan Navara.
Yeah, or as it's also known, in Mercedes S-Class without the mascara.
Without the mascara.
That sounds like a bit of an under-added compliment,
yes.
But the reality is the X-Class is heavily based on this.
Oh, really?
So when we get one on test, I'm actually really curious to see how it compares. But what I can say is this Navara really, really impressed me. I've heard some good things about it,
mm-hmm.
but when it arrived, I was very, very pleasantly surprised. For starters, it's, would you believe it, a high-value offering.
A high-value offering, so you're getting bang for buck.
Yeah. Okay, this was the 4x2 version, so it's only rear-wheel drive, no fancy transfer cases and extra things. This was, in fact, the entry-level one, so it's called the Double Cab SE.
Mm-hmm.
Now, SE is the one with the smaller wheels, cloth seats, Really nothing fancy about it at first glance. But for 462,000 rand, well, 100 bucks shy of that.
Yeah.
That actually makes it one of the best priced high power double cams on the market. And when I say high power, I mean 140 kilowatts and 450 newton meters. It's right up there with the best in this class.
Okay.
It's not quite up to the level of an Amarok V6, but then again, nothing is.
Yes.
What I really would love to see is the old V9X engine, but I don't think that's going to happen.
I mean, I remember when these first came out, like I was telling you just a little bit earlier, they were very popular, but I took a ride in the back seat and it was hard as hell.
But it's bucky.
It's a bucky.
Still got the leaf spring suspension.
No, this one is
coil sprung with five link. It's not independent suspension, but at least it's coil sprung.
It's not leaf spring.
Yeah.
There's actually, if you jump onto the link there, you can actually see they've got a picture of the chassis with the coils and the suspension.
Rear suspension.
And that does make a huge difference. And interestingly enough, the quoted loadability is exactly the same as any of the leaf sprung buckies out there. So it can tow 3.5 tons,
okay.
Right? I think the loading capacity is 1,100 or something.
Yeah.
So you can actually, on this double cab bucket, you can put a lot of stuff on this thing.
Yeah.
Sure.
Without overtaxing those coil springs. So that's very nice. But the engine actually really impressed me the most.
Okay.
Look, this one was a manual transmission. So it's a 6-speed manual, which is a bit notchy and not really... Well, let's call it truck-like.
Mm.
I think it's probably the same unit as you'd find in a 370Z. So it's not really slick shifting or very quick, but it's definitely heavy duty. But that engine is a masterpiece. Now, they quote that torque peak from 1,500 to 2,500 RPM. But the reality is, just above idle, it actually starts pulling like a steam train. Oh, almost really? Like an electric motor.
I'm glad you put that word almost in there. But I suppose the lowdown torque is from the diesel engine versus your V6s.
Yeah, but also a twin turbo diesel. So it's a sequential setup.
Ah.
So there's almost no turbo lag to start off with.
Because and they're then, sequentially.
Yes. And then as the first turbo starts running out of puff, literally, the second one cuts in. And that actually makes it usable up to 5,000 RPM. I haven't seen a bucky diesel that actually enjoys going past 4,000 RPM, and this one does.
Yeah, wow.
And then it was impressively economical as well. Yeah. I mean, I drove it without any specific attention to fuel consumption because it arrived with a full tank, full 85-liter tank. So, let's just enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I returned it after a week without having to put in diesel at 8.6 liters per 100.
Sure.
Wow. Average.
That's not bad.
That's without trying.
And that's town driving.
That's about 60% town, 40% freeway.
It's without trying to make it sip.
Yeah.
Sure, but that's really good.
All right.
That's really good.
Unfortunately,
the
back seat still isn't as comfortable as your sofa. It's better than the old one, and there's a bit more space.
Because the old one had a bench seat.
So does this.
Is it a bench
seat? So does this. It just has some bolstering on the sides.
Okay.
If you want a double cab with a really comfortable back seat, you have to look at either a Fiat Fullback or a Mitsubishi Triton.
Okay.
Because they have more space and longer seat squabs and the angles are different and the whole thing is laid out more like a passenger car.
But fine for lighties. I reckon
it's fine for lighties.
Two young boys in the back there, they're not really going to kick up
the
fuss.
It's quite wide. You could probably fit 3 16-year-olds or 4 10-year-olds in there.
Okay.
Just don't, because you don't have enough safety belts.
No, absolutely. And then just in terms of styling, interior styling, is it?
Generic innocent.
Okay.
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
There's nothing really special about it. There's nothing that really offends either.
Yeah.
But it's kind of generic, well, let's call it Japanese bucky level.
Okay.
Right. Yeah. So there's nothing special about the interior.
No curved dashboard, plastic.
No soft touch plastics anywhere or anything of that sort. The upholstery, believe it or not, was a bit of a bugbear. Okay. I have a white Alsatian at home, and I do tend to pick up some dog hairs on my clothing. And as I sat down on this black, it's almost like a velour type material, velour type cloth. And as you get off, the dog is stay behind.
That's all right. This isn't on your clothes.
It's easier to vacuum off the car seats than your jacket or your pants.
You don't have to look like a rugrat.
But the LE version comes with leather seats. An interesting thing on this bucket, though, and I only discovered it very late on, the back glass, the rear glass, is actually electric. So the sliding window at the back
is electric.
It's only a small aperture, but at least that opens remotely from the front.
Enough to pass your chanas or sitting in the back a beer on a hot game drive.
If you need some ventilation without turning on the aircon.
Okay.
No, you can open the back.
Yeah, I mean, it's quite nice. I mean, you know, when they first came out, you know, I thought it was a decent looking. It's quite a rugged looking, tough.
It's even better looking in the metal, I have to say.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, look, I came into this Navara with fairly high expectations, having heard good things, but I'm happy to say it actually surpassed all of those.
Fantastic, fantastic. All right, well, thanks very much for that. And that will be, by the time you've listened to that, the article will be on our site and pictures and everything. So thank you very much for that. It's moving on to some tech stuff here. Tesla disputes report that says 23% of Model 3 orders were refunded. Long story short, there's obviously a company that collects data that can obviously see, you know, the business analytics platform that looks at billions of anonymized purchases from credit and debit cards in April, and the automaker refunded $1,000 deposits twice as fast as they garnered them. I have a sneaky feeling that, I don't know, some people have got their claws out because Tesla are just doing things completely differently, and you're going to find it when you deal with a disruptor, aren't you?
Yeah, you know, I don't know why there are so many haters of Tesla and want it to fail, where Elon Musk has openly said, use my technology. My objective here is to further the future of sustainable energy. That's my objective.
Yeah.
I mean, he could have hid the battery technology. He could have kept it to himself.
He didn't have to disclose how many he had pre-orders on or anything like that.
Well, he does because it's a public company. But but in terms of the technology itself, he's given a lot of that technology to the industry.
Yeah.
And I think it's just a case of, you know, when it comes to the car industry, a new entrant finds it incredibly difficult to break in.
Well,
because the mold is there and people don't like change.
Absolutely. I mean, I was going to say that. I think, you know, especially in the motor industry, it is an old industry. So, I mean, is there a sense of a bit of an old boys club here? And, you know, you get some young, hot youngster coming in doing things completely differently. Yeah. You're going to try and, you know, he's obviously a threat. He's a massive threat.
And I think, just because of that, I hope he succeeds or Tesla succeeds and becomes the market leader by far in electric cars. I think they are at the moment.
In electrics, yes.
In electrics. Yeah. But the others are threatening, you know, to try and take that position.
Yeah.
But I hope he gets his factory issues sorted out so that he can, you know, show the world.
Actually start building them.
Well, he is getting it out the factory at the moment. So that production ramp up, I think, is on 4,000 cars now. So you know, you're right. Why have people got their claws out for Tesla? Who knows? Old boys club, don't know.
Well, we'll see what happens, because this is, I mean, we were going to chat about this just now when you spoke about that 330 having an electric engine. This electric Range Rover Classic is lighter than the Tesla Model S. So most of us have a soft spot for early Range Rovers and old classics. And, you know, while the design couldn't be more fashionable, the same cannot be said. And I mean, I have no idea, Mark, you'll probably be able to expand a little bit about the Buick delivered a 3.5-liter Rover V8.
I have a shameful confession to make.
Please confess.
I actually have a classic Range Rover.
Oh, do you really?
Huh. Yes.
They are, I mean, you know what? You see them on the road, that's a beautiful car.
Absolute disaster.
It's just leaked everywhere.
It's because it's held together with different parts from different manufacturers.
The nice thing, the one nice thing I have to say is it doesn't use oil.
Oh,
because
okay.
It runs dry from all the leaks before it could use them.
But
so, an electric motor in that Range Rover would actually be a huge improvement.
Yeah.
In fact, if they could get rid of the Land Rover gearbox and transfer case as well, I'd be even happier.
So that says here that using 15 of the Tesla Model S P85 16 battery packs, the UK and there's a company in the UK called Electric Classic Cars, turned a 1972 Range Rover into a twin motor regeneration champ with 130 horsepower and 213 feet per pounds of torque on tap. I don't know what that equates to in the metric.
It's about 300 it's about 300.
But so the reason I put this story on the cards for us to chat about do you think we're going to see a lot of this? I personally honestly believe that if you take classic car styling, you take a Mustang, you take a Range Rover like this, you take a number of old classic cars, guys are going to put electric motors in them, and you still get the nostalgia of the old vehicle. Yes, to your point, you're not going to hear the engine purr or roar or whatever, you know what, honestly, like, this excites me, and I really think that this is going to be,
it's like upgrading your VW City Golf and putting a 2-liter turbocharged, modern current Golf GTI motor in it.
Yeah.
I mean, that's been done how many times?
Absolutely.
So this, I think you're absolutely right. It's going to happen more and more.
It's going to happen more and more. If you're listening to the show, just log on to this website quickly. It's called electricclassiccars.co.uk. Electric Classic Cars.
Look, I can definitely approve of this Range Rover. In fact, I'm looking at this and I'm already doing the mental calculations. How much can I get for that Buick V8?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you just have a look at that site, I mean, there's a beautiful VW Beetle that they've converted.
But did you know there's a local company which also converts
Beetles
into
electrics?
Yeah. I'll try and find you the details.
I think you're going to start seeing a lot of these is going to become a product offering from a lot of companies.
Especially in cases such as these, where the basic mechanicals are
easy to
rubbish.
Tap into. Yeah.
Like Beetles as well.
What was wrong with the City Golf?
Nothing.
No, there's nothing wrong with the City Golf.
So, I mean, here we talk about Beetles, Fiat 500s, and I mean the classic VW camper van. I mean, put an electric motor in that and away you go. Guys, I think, that's. So we do have to wrap it a little bit short today, but I think that is Auto Central in a nutshell. The banter has been fantastic. Really, another great show. Gents, thanks very much.
Thank you,
and
thanks,
we will catch you guys in 2 weeks' time. Have a great week, everybody. Cheers.
Cheers.
This is CliffCentral.com.